Hey everybody, it's Scott Johnson and this is the Daily Blip, and I've got some bad news. If you like plastic and extra hardware, if that's the thing you're a fan of in your video games, meaning, you know, sometimes the default controllers that come with your consoles are fine. Sometimes that's great. Sometimes you want to go elsewhere, though. You want to go outside the limits of what Sony or Microsoft or even, you know, you're going to get on your PC. Sometimes you want to go to an accessory maker like, oh, I don't know, Mad Catz. Remember them? Well, apparently not enough people remember them because they have filed for bankruptcy. They have apparently been struggling for a couple of years, and it is now official. It's not necessarily surprising news, but it is disappointing. Mad Catz Interactive announced today, that's today, Friday, today, that it has filed for bankruptcy. They're the parent company of video game accessory maker Mad Catz and audio company Triton. It has voluntarily filed for bankruptcy yesterday. That was on the 30th and is officially there today. Its directors and officers also resigned. And, you know, keyboards, mice, controllers, video game accessories of all types. Fighting sticks for, you know, your favorite fighting game. Weird covers and cases and portable things for your GBA and stuff like that. Those are the guys. They are expected to have all of their assets liquidated, with the exception of Triton, because they didn't say. Maybe they're going to try to salvage their audio cable business. But anyway, it's been a little bit rough. In 2015, it warned of substantial doubt about the company's ability to continue, due to uncertainty around the performance of Rock Band 4, which it made a huge gamble on. They thought that coming back of Rock Band was going to be all that and then some, and that they were going to do really well in that regard. They had a big shakeup last year in its management team. They cut a large portion of its workforce. They tried to restructure. Still wasn't enough. Shortly after all that happened, Harmonix announced it would partner with competing accessory maker PDP for future Rock Band 4 hardware. And that kind of was the nail in the coffin there, sounds like. They had a very low share price for Mad Catz that put them in the... I guess it put them in a position where they were going to get delisted from the New York Stock Exchange. It's kind of a big deal. Anyway, they formed a committee last year to explore ways of maximizing shareholder value, ultimately leading to today's news. They can't do it. It's time to go bankrupt. Sometimes that's the way you go. We liked you while you were here, Mad Catz. And we wish you the best. If you're a Fantasy 14 fan, you are excited about what I'm about to tell you. A TV series is heading to Netflix this fall. Japanese TV drama will take place both in and outside of the game. Again, that game being Final Fantasy 14. So it may sound like a little bit of a joke, right? But not really. It's not April Fool's yet. And by the way, tomorrow, I'm not doing any fake news. None. You can count on coming to the Daily Blip right here on Anchor without having any of that crap. I hate it. I can't stand it. I mean, I don't mind mentioning one of the good video game industry jokes here and there, but I'm not going to fake some news, all right? Not doing it. Streaming TV. That's the debut we're looking forward to. It's called Daddy of Light. Again, the way they translate words from Japanese to English sometimes leave me wondering what's happening with the world. But anyway, Final Fantasy 14, Daddy of Light. It's a Japanese TV drama, originally called Final Fantasy 14, Hikari no Otusan in Japanese. I hope I'm saying that right. Shows up in April in Japan. Later, Netflix will have it this fall, and that'll be worldwide. You can get a sneak peek at a trailer. It's out now. The show is a mix of live action scenes and in-game footage. It's a classic... this is what they say on Gizmodo. It's a classic father and son story with a modern twist. The son gives his dad a copy of Final Fantasy 14 for the PlayStation 4. As the dad starts to play, his son joins him online, helping his father through the game, but not revealing his true identity. Meanwhile, the son writes a blog detailing his experiences, secretly reconnecting with his father. So for those who are excited because you thought you were going to get a big, full CGI rad, you know, sequel to one of the cooler ones that they've done recently, or even just with their animation team, that's probably not what you're going to get here. The game is an MMO, as you know, or at least in 2010. It's done pretty well. People seem to like it. And it got revamped in 2013. That's when people really started to like it. And they got a new expansion cap coming out, or a pack. Pack is what I meant to say, coming out soon. Square Enix recently made changes to the game's free trial, dropping the 14-day time limit and instead going with a level limit. Anyway, you got something to look forward to on TV now that sounds super weird to me, but I wouldn't want it any other way. So get your Final Fantasy XIV TV show, or as I like to say, the way it's written here, Final Fantasy XIV Daddy of Light, coming to a small and large screen near you. I miss The Witcher. I love The Witcher. The Witcher's great. Witcher 3 was a great game. Its DLC was great. I mean, truthfully, I've not gone through that game and cleared out every possible nook and cranny and every single side quest. But I'd sure like to. Anyway, I may have to hurry up because eventually Witcher 4 may be a thing. But the dev said today, we'll think about it. Of The Witcher 4, nothing confirmed. So this isn't, you know, you can't count on this being for sure. It says, we like this world a lot. This is a direct quote from CCP, or Project CD, rather. They said, we like this world a lot. We've invested 15 years of our lives in it and lots of money. Why, I agree. Your players have spent a bunch of time in the game as well. Anyway, they said The Witcher was designed as a trilogy, and a trilogy cannot have a fourth part, can it? Said executives during a Q&A session. There was, followed their sort of financial briefing. So we'll think about making a fourth Witcher game, they said later. Right now, their current projects include Gwent, the Witcher card game. There's no car game. There's nothing with The Witcher and a car in it, all right? I just wanted to make that clear so you don't go spreading rumors about a Witcher-based car game. I am Geralt of Rivia, and I drive a Riviera. Get it? Geralt of Riviera? Come on, that's pretty good. Anyway, that card game's really good. Cyberpunk 2077 is coming along nicely. They say that it's, we're going to see more on that soon. I wonder if soon means E3, maybe? Something? Anyway, they do believe that the Witcher series deserves some rest. That is according to Marcin Iwinski. He is the CD Projekt Red boss. And the team is shifting all their efforts right now to getting Cyberpunk 2077 out the door. He says the past 10 years, the team has been working on swords and castles and medieval Slavic monsters. So I think it's time for some guns, androids, and some ammo. Anyway. Oh, and by the way, they also announced during this call that The Witcher has reached 25 million units sold. I would call that a very successful run for The Witcher. So bring on the other stuff. It's fine. Do you disagree? Would you like Witcher 4 first? Email me and tell me. Scott@frogpants.com. Today. Finally, today on The Blip, news of a departure. Oculus founder Palmer Luckey leaving Facebook. And Oculus, the company he helped found and sell to Facebook for a huge amount of money. Luckey will part ways with the company later this week. As you know, he is the co-founder of Oculus VR and probably the most prominent face in the VR business. They confirmed the news with GameSpot, saying in a statement, Palmer will be dearly missed. Palmer's legacy extends far beyond Oculus. His incentive spirit helped kickstart the modern VR revolution, literally on Kickstarter, and build an industry. We're thankful for everything he did for Oculus and VR, and we wish him all the best. It was originally announced, or reported by the website Upload VR, which said that today, the 31st, is Luckey's final day with the company. More like Palmer. Unlucky. I had to make the joke. I had to do it. All right. Anyway, we don't know what prompted the move, but you can probably make a guess. There was a big kind of whirlwind around Luckey and Oculus last year. And it found people found out that he financially supported a bunch of pro-Republican political group shit posting on the internet. And a lot of people did not like that, including their parent company. And for the most part, they just sort of kept him quiet, pushed him off to the corner. And he was no longer showing up on stage or doing interviews or whatever. Some developers actually pulled support for Oculus VR at the time. Do you guys remember that? It was pretty gnarly. And Lucky apologized at the time. But anyway, Bethesda's parent company, ZeniMax Media, still all up in their business. $500 million as part of a lawsuit alleging the virtual reality technology was stolen from them and used to develop the Oculus Rift. And for a long time there, ZeniMax was specifically targeting Lucky. Although at the end of all, well, there's still some more to be done on that, so who knows if he's done talking or not. But anyway, yeah, I don't know how to feel about this. Palmer was quite the evangelist for the technology. I mean, he was the first name you heard, right? Got to give him credit for that. But things got a little weird in the end. But not here for the Daily Blip. Like the channel and share it with your friends and get the app. Anchor is the app on iOS and Android. Much better than the website. Although the website's cool, but you want the app. That's what you want. And we'll be back soon with more episodes tomorrow, in fact. So come on back for that. Thank you guys for listening. I'll see you then. Hello, everybody. This is Scott Johnson. Welcome to the Daily Blip. And a few days ago, we talked about the fact that Destiny 2 was announced, that it would be coming to PC as well as consoles. And because it's finally been announced, it's time for you, the diehard fan, to figure out where the crap you're going to get it. Also, where is the best place to get it? And also, which bonuses or which pre-orders or which things are going to give you the best deal, right? It can get a little convoluted when big games like this are being announced. And you know there's always going to be some big collector's edition. And I found a great compilation of where you're going to get it, what you might get with it, and the money you might save. All right? So, here are some pre-order bonuses from various retailers. That is to say, if you're getting the disc versions, although maybe it's okay for the PC side and codes for consoles, maybe that also applies here. I'm not 100% sure on that. But here you go. Retailer GameStop. They are not guaranteeing release day delivery. It's important to know, but your pre-order bonus is a side six figure or Kayade. I don't play Destiny 1, so I don't know what the hell that is. Kayade-6. It's a figurine. So maybe there's one reason to get it there. Best Buy, no guaranteed day of release. However, they also do not tell you what your possible pre-order bonus is, because they don't have one in place yet, but you can pre-order it. So that may be inserted later. And finally, Amazon will guarantee your release date delivery. It will come the day the game is out, and no pre-order bonus announced. I don't know, is it Sidey, Katie, whatever it is. That figurine that comes from GameStop's pretty cool. It's kind of a big-headed bobble-looking thing, though. So there's that. It does not come with digital pre-order bonuses. And, oh gosh, what else? Let's see. You got your... I forgot to mention. This Digital Deluxe version, which is digital only for the PS4, comes with the Destiny 2 base game, Destiny 2 Expansion Pass, premium digital content, which includes the Legendary Sword, Legendary Player Emote, and a Cabal Empire-themed emblem. Huh. There's still no... Well, whatever. I don't want to get into that. The limited edition is $100. Comes with the game, the expansion pass, limited edition steelbook case, collector's box containing booklet and secrets of the Cabal Empire, Cabal schematic, collectible postcard images, Cabal military pawns, premium digital content, legendary sword, the emote, and the emblem as well. You can get the $250 collector's edition. That comes with a whole bunch of extra stuff. So there's that. That comes with a customizable bag that can be worn as a backpack or messenger bag and a 15-inch laptop tablet sleeve with protective slip. So I guess take your Destiny 2 on the road. So PC version coming alongside, but we don't know any bonuses for that yet. So anyway, you can expect some of the digital stuff to be similar. But there it is, this fall, Destiny coming with all the things you want and maybe a few you don't. One of the things I like about Rocket League is they haven't been afraid to be more than just a video game when it comes to their extra content or their, I guess, add-on content or their DLC. I was a big fan of when they released the Mad Max themed arena, as well as some cars that were definitely from that. They didn't call it, I mean, I don't think they had the branding for Mad Max specifically or Fury Road, but it was right around that time and it took good advantage of that look and feel. And I love that. I like that a lot. And they've had some official stuff too. You could get a DeLorean a little bit there. I think you can still get it. That was to celebrate Back to the Future. And it's, what was it? It's 30-year anniversary or whatever it was. Anyway, they've been doing this a bunch and various things have been coming out from the fine folks there, and they now have a direct connection and license from the Fate of the Furious franchise, or the Fast and Furious franchise, and their new film, Fate of the Furious. DLC introduces the Ice Charger, which is a Dodge Charger driven by Dominic Toretto, Vin Diesel, you know him, in the upcoming film. They'll be selling the in-game premium battle car for $1.99, comes with exclusive wheels and 6 decals, including clean-cut, crazy sandwich, flames, Rally, and CCCXL. I don't know what any of that means. Anyway, this DLC hits on April 4th. And if you are such a fan of the Fast and the Furious that you just have to get your hands on a rocket soccer car themed after that from the movie, then by gum, some good news for you on the horizon. But anyway, I like it. I like that Rocket League is doing this. I like that they're getting more into competitive play. I like that Rocket League is standing the test of time and continues to be a growing, developing game. I thought their basketball thing was going to suck. That was great. I don't know if you guys have played that mode. It's great. It totally works. I didn't think it was going to. But it does. Anyway, long live Rocket League. Been one of those games that just decided it wasn't going to leave. And I'm happy to be along for the ride. The Fate and the Furious coming in April. Go get in a car and hit a giant ball, will you? Of UK game developers are thinking about leaving over Brexit. This is kind of a big deal. And when that whole Brexit thing was going down, this is, you know, Britain, the United Kingdom, I guess, Britain most specifically, leaving the European Union has implications across the board, be they economic or social or whatever. There's just a ton of impact from a move like this. And it hadn't occurred to me at the time how many incredible developers that are not only in Europe, but many of them centralized there in the UK someplace, and they bring us some pretty incredible games. I mean, just about every major AAA party game you've played, first-party game or third-party game you've played, has, I shouldn't say all of them, but many of them have their origins in Europe. I'll give you some names. Rockstar North, Ninja Theory, Codemasters, Creative Assembly, Traveler's Tales, Rocksteady, Fireproof Studios, Hello Games, among many others. Although Hello Games is kind of in the pooper right now. Well, whatever. I haven't tried the update to No Man's Sky. I should probably try that. But anyway, 40% of 76 different developers that responded to this survey are considering relocation of either some or all of their business away from the UK to some other country. And their big concern is available talent. As many as 61% of respondents say they rely strongly on international talent to fuel their development. And a much more closed-off Britain means a much, I don't know, in their minds anyway, it means a much much more closed-off opportunity for finding talented developers, artists, and whatnot. So you could see some of these guys being incentivized to move to, I don't know, Spain or Germany or France or something, right? So yeah, this sort of stuff affects things. I mean, I'm not incredibly educated on the entire Brexit thing, so I don't have a strong opinion one way or the other. I don't think it would be fair for me to have one at this stage. But there does seem to be some developers who are nervous about it. And by the way, the group that did the did this survey slash information gathering was Yuki, the Association for UK Interactive Entertainment. And it was a 2017 report. And there are big suggestions in there that there might be a big exodus from Brexit. So Brexit's the great exodus, and then there will be a sub-exodus of game developers potentially from that. And who knows, the formal start of the United Kingdom's departure from the EU began this week. Maybe this is also the formal start of developers deciding what they're going to do next. I sure hope it works out for them and us as games players. All right, to close us out today, I wanted to report on my playthrough of the Batman Telltale series, parts 1 through 5. It was a 5-episode product. Like most Telltale games, you could buy it all up front, and then as each episode came out, you could pick up the newer one, which is what I did. And I finally got around to playing it all, and we decided to play it on stream over there at frogpants.tv, and we did it every Saturday morning at 11 o'clock during a segment or a stream that we call Saturday Story Mode, and it's just story-based games that we play during that time, myself and my daughter. So we played through the entirety of Batman in 5 weeks, and I'm so torn on it. On the one hand, I really like big parts of the story and interesting twists that they decided to take, but part of me also doesn't like that they took so much liberty with some of the established characters in the Batman canon in a way that really changes them at a very fundamental level. And I don't know, you know, not that many people are going to look to this video game as the latest and greatest source of, you know, Batman information or where characters are heading or where they should be going. So it's not that big a deal, but they really did fiddle with some fundamental stuff. I don't want to spoil anything in case you're going to play it, but there are some characters who you know from Batman of lore and of yore that take some interesting twists. In ways that maybe sometimes messes a little bit too much with their fundamental characters. But anyway, whatever. That's one thing. The other thing is, on the technical level, every once in a while I would be wowed by this game. It would be really impressive to me visually and gameplay-wise. And then other times it would be janky and kind of crummy. So there's a real inconsistency with it. And I know, you know, they're known for having their characters look a little stiff and their eyes are a little dead. And, you know, it's not... We're not talking about the greatest in animation or whatever, but usually it tells enough of a cohesive story that it's fine. But also the entirety of the gameplay added up to two basic things. Quick time events when you were fighting for the most part as Batman, and then detective stuff while you were either Batman or Bruce Wayne and you were trying to understand what happened in a certain scene. You're linking up evidence and that sort of thing. And that's really the only interaction you have with the game. And that was both kind of okay, and part of me was like, go a little further with this. Telltale's gotten completely away from the, you know, Sam and Max ideals of adventure games and moved into this much more, you know, story choices. Like, and the choices seem meaningful, right? Harvey Dent did a very different thing in my story than it did for someone else I talked to. So that stuff I think I'm kind of cool with, but I don't know. On the whole, some of that was a little tiny bit of a bummer that you just couldn't do more in the world. But anyway, out of 10, I'm going to give it a 6.5. I think it was strong. It was mostly just fun playing it with somebody. We laughed, had a good time. It's all up on YouTube at youtube.com/Scott Johnson, the entire series. Except for episode 1, I think it got corrupted or something, but we retained the rest of it. And future episodes can be seen live at frogpants.tv. That's what takes you to our Twitch channel. So go over there, subscribe, and like it, and you'll get let known when things happen. I think that's going to do it. Thank you all for listening today. Like and tell your friends about this channel. If you like what we're doing here on Anchor, there's more to come. Certainly more to come tomorrow even. And what else? Also, don't forget... get the app too. Don't just use the website. Get the app. Excuse me. Anchor on iOS and Android. You guys are awesome. Have a great weekend. We'll see you tomorrow. This is the Daily Blip, and I'm Scott Johnson. You may recall that when the PlayStation VR launched, nobody talked about a killer app at that time. Except maybe one game, or one experience, or whatever you want to call it, seemed to stick out and surprise a lot of people. And that was Batman Arkham VR. I have great news for PC players. If you were looking at that thinking, that would be cool if I could have that, then great news. It's coming to you, and it's coming soon. For both the Oculus Rift and the HTC Vive, the other two mainstream VR headsets. The ultimate in heroic wish fulfillment, as it's been called on Games Radar, Batman Arkham VR is leaving the PlayStation exclusivity and heading to PC April 25th. We'll also be on both those other devices as I mentioned before. So that's cool. Doesn't say how much the controllers it's going to match up with. I assume it'll be at least as good as the PlayStation had with the Move controllers. Bringing Batman to VR was a very rewarding experience for us here at Rocksteady, says Sefton Hill there at Rocksteady. The Dark Knight has always been an incredible character to work with, and due to his psychological depth, so it's really exciting to use this immersive medium to delve deeper into his psyche than ever before. So they're thrilled. PC players finally get to wear the cowl for themselves and take on the role of the world's greatest detective with the addition of the HTC Vive and Oculus Rift versions. And I guess it does support the touch now and the Vive controller, so that's good news. Anyway, Batman, coming. Faster than you thought, to a platform you love that's not a console, if you're that kind of dude and you like PCs. All right, I'll talk to you soon. Everybody, it's Scott again, and I've got to talk about a thing that's exciting. Although, I don't know if it's exciting for Nintendo. I'm guessing they're pretty freaked out about this or upset about it. But a fully playable version of Breath of the Wild, and I shouldn't say a legal version, an illegal version of Breath of the Wild, you know, that's the new hot Zelda game, is running at 4K in the Simu emulator. Just a month ago, they were showing this thing off, and it looked pretty bad. Lots of problems, lots of hitches and hiccups. Most of the mechanical stuff in the game didn't seem to be working. But it looked pretty, at least, you know, parts of it. And, wow, what a difference a month can make. A dramatic improvement, visually. You can go see this video on YouTube. Just search for fully playable Zelda BOTW. Or look up SEMA. It'll show, or SEMU, rather. C-E-M-U. I gotta say, I'm kind of blown away by this. A little freaked out. I didn't expect it to look this good. The grass looks like it's supposed to. Link doesn't constantly clip through the ground like he did a month ago in the old videos. The water is swimmable now. You can pick up objects, move them, use your tools as intended. They're claiming the game is not only playable, but 100% beatable. You need some hefty hardware, though, to run this thing. This emulator is running on a Core i7-6700K CPU running at 4.3 GHz, 16 GB of RAM, and a GTX 1070. Yeah. Fully playable means Nintendo's probably not happy about this. But it does, you know, I mean, I love to see cool games that are running on lesser hardware running on a vastly superior piece of hardware. And hey, since I own it, can I legally, technically, like, claim that I can play it legally this way? Or how's that work? I don't think that's possible, actually. Might be making that up. Anyway, I'd recommend checking the video out. Unless you really don't, if you want to feel bad about your frame rate on your new handheld, then maybe don't. I'll be back with later. Stay tuned. All right. I'm back. And look, Kickstarter, that's become a thing for gamers. I remember back in like 2009 or 2010, 7, 8 years ago, geez, when, you know, Kickstarter seemed like a weird thing. It was going to come disrupt everything and kind of freak everybody out. Nobody quite knew what to expect from it, and nobody was sure if it would live up to what it was, what was capable of in terms of it being a platform for independent games to get off the ground. And here we are this many years later, and we now have a number to assign to how much Kickstarter has impacted the games industry. That's a better way to put it. 10,000 game projects have been funded. That doesn't mean failed ones. Plenty of those, too. 10,000 have funded successfully on Kickstarter. Man. You know how much money that is? Let me tell you that. Players have pledged more than $600 million towards games on the platform since the thing launched. That's crazy, dude. Crazy. That's across the entirety of Kickstarter, which includes 122,200 projects that have been funded. Again, doesn't count the ones that didn't make it or that they had to restart or whatever. And that translates to 2.46 million people who have backed games projects. And let's see, an additional 1.45 million backers have supported more than one game. That's pretty impressive recidivism there. One of the biggest is probably Shenmue 3, which we still don't have. Is that coming out this year? What was the deal with that? Or was it 2018? I'm annoyed by that game, so I didn't pay much attention to it. I didn't like the first Shenmue game anyway, so... Or the second one. Anyway. They're not the first category to cross 10,000, though. Art, publishing, and film, and video, and music have all hit that mark before. So, don't go thinking that gaming is the greatest thing in the history of the world, even though it is. the most funded Kickstarter game is the board game Kingdom Dearth, Monster 1.5, which got 12.4 million. The most funded video game project is still Shenmue 3, 6.3 million. And, you know, Kickstarter is where Star Citizen started. It raised 2.1 million on the site, then shifted to its own site, which currently has a total of 145.9 million dollars in total funding. And, yeah, I mean, who knew, right? I'm going to give you your top four. Top four projects. Kingdom Dearth, we talked about that. Then Exploding Kittens, number two. The Ouya, remember that piece of garbage? That's number three. And Shenmue is number four. These are projects of all time. And if you break it out just by video game, Shenmue 3 is the number one video game. Then the rest of this top 10 reads like a bunch of board games. Like, for real, it's all tabletop all the time. With a few exceptions. Pillars of Eternity, which is a game I enjoyed quite a bit. That's on that list as well in the top six, it looks like. Four, five, six. Yeah, it's number six. Anyway, Kickstarter. Still a thing. Still happening. Still a place for you to get your video games on. And a good time to be had on Kickstarter. How many guys, I mean, do you go to Kickstarter a lot? I'm very curious about this. Send me your emails, scott@frogpants.com. Very curious. Project Scorpio in the news. Microsoft's follow-up to the Xbox One and this year's revitalization, potentially, of the platform. Looks like we're going to get some news this week. That's the rumor. Apparently. There's no confirming anything on this, but there's a lot of leaks saying, ooh, big stuff on the Scorpio coming. Now, don't forget that thing's coming out this holiday season, so there's plenty of unanswered questions and issues sort of surrounding it. Rumor has it that they may be gearing up for some news, and that means soon. It could be this week. Tweets from Windows Central editor Jez Corden and Shinobi suggest that Microsoft may announce more details on the console specs this week. This according to GameStop. Spot, rather. While the Inner Circle says this might happen Thursday, April 6th, Xbox boss Phil Spencer has weighed in as well via NeoGAF. Spencer himself responded to a tweet about Scorpio's reveal. He did not give much away, said he's very happy with how support is coming together for first and third party developers for the updated console. You'll hear more soon. Sorry for the wait, he says. That's all we know there. Certainly, Microsoft will have a big showing for Project Scorpio at E3 during their press briefing, as well as the show in general. And as this is a public event now, or this year, that could be something. We don't know anything about internal specs. We do know that Project Scorpio works with all Xbox One games, supports the controllers and other peripherals you may already own, boasts 6 teraflops of performance, 8 CPU cores, and 320 gigabytes per second worth of memory bandwidth, which makes it the most powerful console ever made, according to Microsoft. Certainly beats the PlayStation Pro with those rumored specs. Again, we don't know everything about the specs. So I'd keep your eye out, maybe this Thursday, for a big reveal from Microsoft. Or maybe you're going to wait till E3. I don't know. But there'll be more Daily Blip tomorrow. Check us out on the Anchor app. Anchor on iOS and Android. Thanks for listening. We'll see you guys later. Hey guys, it's Scott Johnson here with the Daily Blip. Looks like Overwatch fans might be excited about a possibility happening in the world of Heroes of the Storm. Looks like another hero could be joining Tracer, Zarya, and Lucio in the Nexus. If you're a player of Blizzard's fantastic MOBA, Heroes of the Storm, you'll note that Overwatch seems to be a ripe place to farm characters lately. And it looks like everybody's pretty convinced that Genji is going to happen. So what happened is there was a subreddit for Heroes where somebody posted a recent fan video and some screen grabs from that video. And it was from they had sort of a spring summit conference in France. And from that conference, there were some screen grabs of these screens showing character select screens. And many believe that what they're looking at in that screen, a very, mind you, fuzzy, blurry, hard to see screen, is Genji. And if you zoom out, it does look a lot like him. I mean, I they're probably right. But think about it. Don't you think every character in Overwatch will eventually make their way into Heroes of the Storm? If not every, maybe close to it. We're not talking about that many characters anyway, and they all lend themselves well to the way Heroes plays. So I do this show called Core at heroesforyou.com. It's a podcast all about Heroes of the Storm. If you haven't checked it out, you might want to. But we haven't actually discussed this yet because we haven't had a show since this news hit. and having just attended, two of us just attended the Spring Summit here in the States. And a lot of the 2.0 stuff was talked about, but not this. So I don't know. I don't know what to think. But more importantly, how's the ninja gonna do on the battlefield, I wonder? I mean, he plays a lot like, I don't know, Illidan maybe? Kind of a spastic, jump around, freak out kind of character? Anyway, that's not enough to convince you. Maybe the fact that the game keeps growing and new characters being added all the time will do it. Last week, players stopped by the game's website to sign up for version 2.0's beta. And there was also some weird email thing that came, and that sort of indicated an Overwatch-themed character coming, possibly a Battleground as well. So who knows? It's kind of up in the air. But this week, you can expect Cassia from Diablo 2 to come out. That should be tomorrow. Or no, today. Is it today? Well, we may get her today. I haven't heard. But anyway, you'll have that to tide you over until real news comes out about this rumored character. Genji, coming to the Nexus. Possibly. Maybe. Who knows? If you're not playing that game, you should be. Especially with these changes coming. Oh, man. It's good stuff. We'll see you later for more news. Good news if you're a fan of Zelda's latest open-world adventure, Breath of the Wild. According to a producer on the game, Breath of the Wild's setting will become a standard In other words, more open world games to come. Didn't necessarily say more open world Zelda games to come. But I think it's reasonable to think that maybe a future sequel and or additional game in the Zelda series may also use this. I honestly don't know how you can go back. What they've done here is pretty special. It'd be very difficult to imagine the world of Zelda going back to its more linear puzzle roots. Could be wrong, though. Who knows? There's always room for that sort of thing, I guess. And we may get nostalgic for it, but they have kind of redefined open world games in a way that I think it's going to be hard to go back from. But according to... where's his name? Shoot. Lost his name. Producer on the game was asked by Famitsu, the venerable gaming magazine in Japan, or Magazineum, as I almost said. They say they're going to continue to use the unique blend of Breath of the Wild, and you're going to see more of these open world type games in their future. I think that, this is the quote, I think that in the future, open air games will be the standard for Zelda. Open air is probably a bad translation. I think what he means is open world. They have found huge commercial and critical success with Breath of the Wild. And that game, as you know, bucks many of the traditional elements of a Zelda game. And that non-linear style has led me and many others to spend many, many hours scavenging the Great Plateau, as well as other places in that world. Which is a totally valid way to play that game. You don't even have to... I mean, I don't know how many hours I went before I even went near a dungeon. I'm still early in that game, and I've spent hours and hours and hours and hours in it. So, anyway, there's still big bosses to defeat. You still get to save Hyrule Castle. You still get to do those things that you ultimately want to do in all your Zelda games, but you do it in such a way that, I don't know, it's pretty interesting. My thinking is, this probably means that we'll get a lot other games from first-party Nintendo games that are perhaps dabbling in this area. You can't look this success in the face and not, you know, not know that it's going to be a part of things to come. Or at the very least, you just can't deny the kind of hit that this is. So, more on the way from Nintendo, presumably on the Switch and into the future. Oh, Link, you've grown up so fast. Got a couple of bits from Sony for you today. Just noticed this on my PlayStation Store. Dragon Quest Heroes 2 has a demo out. You can go download it and play it. I've been looking forward to this. Have you guys been paying any attention to what Dragon Quest Heroes 2 looks like? Because I'm not even a Dragon Quest guy. I don't even really care about the series in terms of historically caring about it, but I'm blown away by what I'm seeing in this game. I think it was my buddy Patrick Beja who first turned me onto it and said, look, do you want to play a Dragon Quest game? And I think I might. It's an upcoming sequel to Dragon Quest Heroes. It gives players the chance to play as one of 15 characters from the series. So in the demo, only 4 characters are playable, but it's essentially the whole game. Square Enix says you'll get a chance to experience the game's fast-paced battle, expansive environments, and many quests. So a good taste in this demo, for sure. Unlike the first game, though, it will feature a cooperative multiplayer mode where up to 4 players can face off against swarms of enemies together. Game comes out on PS4 and PC. It looks like Steam on April 25th. The big question is which platform would I get it on if I like it? I don't know. That's April 25th in North America, April 28th in Europe, and anyone who pre-orders the game's Explorer Edition will get 15 in-game bonus weapons as well. I assume that's one per of the 15 characters. Anyway, you also get a PS4 theme and a Dragon Quest 1 hero costume, as well as the Helix, the hero recipe, which you can use in Dragon Quest Builders, which is a whole nother piece of stuff. Anyway, I know nothing about this series, but I just know that the trailers and the video for it make it look incredible. Kind of a Zelda quality to things, if I should say so myself. Maybe I shouldn't say so myself. I know there's Dragon Quest fans who are listening to this are going, Scott, you idiot. You don't know what you're talking about. I don't play these games, but I think I might want this one. So get with me and tell me, Scott at frogpants.com, why should I be interested in this game? The demo should be downloaded by the time I'm finished with this show today. Gotta go play it. So take that, suckers. See you on the other side. You know, I spaced mentioning in the last bit that April's also here. It's April 4th. And that means the PlayStation Plus games are available now for the month. And I've dinked around with both of them, both of the two big ones. First being Lovers and A Dangerous Space Time. This game's been out for a bit on other platforms, even PlayStation, but it's currently free this month. It's kind of a co-op, let's get this spaceship where we need to get it kind of deal. It seems pretty great, although I've only been played it with me and a bot, so I haven't done any co-op yet. I plan on doing that later with one of my kids, or maybe all my kids. And the other is Drawn to Death from David Jaffe and his people, God of War creator David Jaffe. And it's basically like 7th grade stoner kids drawing notebook full of like dragons and demons and heavy metal guys from the 80s. And if you could enter that world where everyone's drawn with a Bic pen and fight, shooter style, that's kind of the game. It's pretty cool. The only complaint I would have about the game would be that it is raunchy as hell. So I don't know that you want to let your kids play it necessarily. I mean, you got to make that call. You're the parent. But seems fun. It's violent. Great. Sweary. Kind of reminds me of high school. worth picking up, I think. And certainly because it's free. So if you have PlayStation Plus, that's what you want to get. So anyway, there's your other Sony news. Also, hey, check it out. If you had a little bit of money hanging around, like $700, I got good news for you, because $100 off the HTC Vive right now, that means normally in the 800 range will now only cost you $700 or so. That's this week. Also, it's the 1 year birthday. And because of that, they're running a sale on the device, dropping it from $800 to $700 later this week. Discount goes in effect one day only. That's April 5th, tomorrow. Just 1 year to the day that the Vive first launched. The headset also comes with a pair of wireless controllers, as has been the truth since the beginning. They're offering everyone a free copy of Arcade Saga that contains 3 arcade games and a free 1 month subscription to Viveport. Viveport's the just announced subscription service that lets users pick 5 games from an ever-growing library of curated content and play them as much as you want for $7 a month. Had you heard about that? It's kind of new. And you can pick new ones every month as new things are being added. Think of it as like it's just a running rental of always having 5 games out. For $7 a month. It's not bad, actually. There are 50 games in that launch, and plenty of you to mess with, including Fantastic Contraption, Mars Odyssey, and Everest VR. Tomorrow's your day. If you don't own one now, it's time to get one, I guess. Although $700 is still expensive. Go check us out on the Anchor app, everybody. iOS and Android, both places. And anchor.fm for details if you need to find out how to do it all. Thanks. Like the channel. Talk to you tomorrow. Hello, everybody. I'm Scott Johnson, and welcome to the Daily Blip, your look at video games on this beautiful Wednesday, the 5th of March. 2017. PlayStation VR is heading to arcades. Yeah, that's right. A public place to get pink eye. I don't know if I made this clear here. Certainly I have on other shows that I do, but I do not like publicly demoed VR headsets. Sony, HTC, Oculus, doesn't matter. Y'all are coming home with pink eye if you go do that. So this idea that one of the great places for VR to flourish is in public at arcades. I don't buy it. That's a place for bacteria and viral infections to flourish. I mean, this is obviously me injecting my own phobias into this a little bit too much, but dude, it's freaking gross. You don't know who's had that headset on. You don't know what they've been touching before they got all up in that. Disgusting. But Sony is planning on placing VR headsets in entertainment facilities in Japan. That's where it will start. They're calling it location-based entertainment. Be led by virtual reality initiative folks there at the company and look for partners in various industries, including VR arcades and the like. There are no current plans for Sony to run its own center, though, so this isn't going to be their own. You're not going to go to, like, the Sony VR park or something like that, as cool as that sounds. Last year, Polygon reported on the growing importance of VR in arcades to help push the technology into becoming more mainstream and improving all of our immune systems because you're putting nasty shit on your face. But look, different forms of VR have been around for a while that have been sort of in arcades, right? Weird headsets and stuff. But it's only recently that we've had the kind of fidelity and control and stuff that you want out of your VR. So it is a new era for this stuff. I'm just saying, it's still freaking gross. If you go to China, you're going to find all kinds of stuff like this, but not as much here in Europe and North America. There is this place near me that called The Void, that's just outside of Salt Lake City, that does like a VR park. It's like laser tag with VR. And people seem to really like that. Anyway, go ahead. Go out there in public. Put one of these on your head. You never know who had infotigo right before you got it. Get that all in your eyes and everything. Well, that was worth a hot 5 minutes in a virtual space. Now you can spend a hot 3 weeks in a virtual bed. Hey, we got more today. Stay tuned. According to the Pokemon Go boss, guy in charge over there at Niantic, says that VR might be too good and could negatively impact society. Seems like everybody from CEOs to tech experts to game dudes all want to weigh in on the viability of VR moving forward. He says, quote, "There's a lot of research out there that shows we're actually a lot happier when we get exercise, when we go outside." I wonder if he has a vested interest in people going outside with their phones and looking for fake Pokemon in the bushes. Anyway, I'll reserve judgment. Virtual reality is a big trend, of course, across all sorts of stuff. And John Hinckley, CEO of Pokemon Go developer Niantic Labs, offered his thoughts on the subject today at the Mixed Reality Summit in London. According to GL.biz, Hanky, it's just an E at the end, so I don't know if I'm supposed to say that. Said VR has the potential to be too good. And again, he thinks that might be a bad thing. He says, in the sense of being an experience that people want to spend huge amounts of time in, I mean, I already have concerns about my kids playing too much Minecraft, and that's a wonderful game. We're human beings, and there's lots of research out there that shows we're actually a lot happier when we get outside. I think it's a problem for us to say... for us as a society, if we forego that and spend all of our time in Ready Player One-style VR universes. He says also there's research about the health impact of Pokemon Go in particular, but you can expand that to apply to all AR games. Again, it feels a little self-serving, doesn't it? I'm not saying I want to spend all day inside looking at a VR screen, so I'm kind of with him on that. But I also don't think that's going to happen. I have a Vive and I get into it occasionally. It's not the kind of thing that's dragging me in there all the time. The experiences have not been that compelling for me not to want to take my headset off. So I don't think he has much to worry about. But also, conflict of interest there, buddy. So I guess the big takeaway, don't look for VR Pokemon Go anytime soon. That's the feeling I get. There are exactly 6 Star Wars and Indiana Jones games arriving on PlayStation Now. PlayStation Now, of course, the service you can pay for that has, 500 games now or so in it? That stream. So you play them and stream them. I don't have to explain that, right? You've seen this before in lots of other, iterations. Other companies use stuff. NVIDIA's got a thing. You can use streaming boxes for your Steam library and send it straight to a Steam link on your TV. Same idea. It's a service you subscribe to. I really think if they want to really blow people out of the water with this, they need to have that included with PlayStation View and have a single package that's less expensive. That's neither here nor there, because this story is about how that thing is growing. And now you can get, as of April 4th, that's today. No, today's the 5th. So as of yesterday? Anyway, you can get Star Wars The Force Unleashed Ultimate Sith Edition, Star Wars The Force Unleashed 2, Lego Star Wars The Complete Saga, and Star Wars 3 The Clone Wars, as well as Lego Indiana Jones The Original Adventures and Lego Indiana Jones The Adventure Continues. I remember really liking that first Indiana Jones Lego game. But again, that puts things at 500 games total now, which is crazy. They shared a list of some of the most popular ones on Now here recently. And here's the ranked popularity. Although it doesn't say ranked necessarily. These are just like the top 10. It doesn't say where they are in relation to each other. But Red Dead Redemption, Mortal Kombat, Sonic Adventure, Sonic Unleashed, WWE 2K15, Tekken Tag Tournament 2, The Last of Us, Sonic Generations, Injustice, Gods Among Us, and NBA 2K14. There's more sports in there than I expected. I don't know why it surprises me. But Red Dead Redemption, not a surprise. Best game of that generation. Name a better one. You can't do it. I could have an argument with you guys all day. You could sit here and say, oh, Mass Effect or freaking the other stuff, whatever. I would say nope. Nope 100 times over, because Red Dead Redemption was the game of the generation for the entire PS3, Xbox 360 era. And I defy you to tell me otherwise. I mean, it's all opinion, right? I realize that. Anyway. But now PlayStation Now is coming to your PC, so that's exciting. Watch for that. And go get these games if you want them, I suppose. If you have a Now account, you already are. What am I? I don't have to tell you that. Overwatch director has told us some things that you'll want to hear if you are an Overwatch fan. Apparently, they abandon a cat hero. I really want to see this thing. Jeff Kaplan's awesome, by the way. I've met him once. He's the nicest guy ever. Did a little intro for the Instance show as well, which was really nice. Anyway, that guy's awesome. Apparently, he's a big peanut butter enthusiast. Did you know that? And they asked him some questions at GameSpot. And I wanted to read some of these because it's kind of interesting. It says, on a scale from 1 to 10, how stressed does having to make tweaks to Overwatch make you? It says, it doesn't stress me at all. If 1 is the lowest end, I'd say 1. It's just the greatest things that we all get to do. We feel very fortunate that we get to work on a game that we absolutely love. So that's pretty cool. He goes on to say, let's see, what kind of shampoo do you use? Why would they ask him this? This is strange, right? Because your hair always looks so great in the developer updates. He laughs. He says, oh, awesome. I don't even know the name of it. It's whatever my wife puts in the shower. I'm terrible. Oh, I don't think you're terrible. I think you're wonderful. What's terrible about you? The answer is nothing. Do you have an upper limit for how many heroes you want in the game? At some point, balancing is going to become an impossible task, right? He says, I don't have a number on my head. It's funny because we have first come up with the game concept. We had a really huge number in mind, and then we kept shrinking that number, and now we're more evaluating things. Almost like an evolving process. So there's no limit. He doesn't at least talk about having a limit. Their final question was, can you patch out Genji? Says, we can. Now the question is, should we patch out Genji? I think we had some problems with Genji when the game was released. It was really challenging for people to deal with. I think Genji has increasingly become more popular, become easier for people to deal with. And we've made some balanced changes. We're also seeing Winston become more prevalent in the meta. And Winston gives Genji a whole lot of trouble. They asked, is that a no then? He says, that's a no. And then laughed. Anyway. Some other really smart questions like this one. Does Winston like crunchy or smooth peanut butter? I think he likes both. I think if left to his own devices, it's smooth. But he wouldn't turn down crunchy either. Getting to the really important issues. Anyway, if you want to read this review, I found it on GameSpot. Just go search for GameSpot. Jeff Kaplan interview or Overwatch interview, and you'll find it. I found it delightful. I think Jeff Kaplan is a national treasure and is wonderful, and I hope he never leaves Blizzard and stays there forever. Thanks, you guys. Check out the app on Android and iOS. Like the channel. Share it with your friends. Back tomorrow with more. See you then. Scott Johnson here with the Daily Blip. Japan, it's a funny place. Well, not so much funny, but there's a lot of interesting things going on there, including this. There was a Japanese teardown of something from a magazine called Formahunt Techno Solutions. It's a website. And they estimate that Nintendo spends about $257 US dollars to make one Nintendo Switch. And you'd be surprised how much those Joy-Cons cost to make. You probably shouldn't be, because they're charging you $79 to replace them. But with a retail price of only $299.99, that leaves very little margin for profit for Nintendo, which is unusual because Nintendo is known for their entire history of milking as much margin as they can out of their hardware. They rarely launch as a loss leader the way Sony or Microsoft or others might have in the past. Their hardware tends to land on market and be profitable from day one. Anyway, they gutted this thing. And the Joy-Con controllers, charging dock, all that stuff. They wanted to catalog every individual component and figure out what it costs. So, best guess is the biggest chunk. That includes touchscreen, processor, and dock. That's running $167 right out of the door. And then the Joy-Cons, on the other hand, are a bit more pricey given their size. Each Joy-Con, somewhere around $45 worth of raw tech and cost. If you add into that, you know, R&D and other budgetary concerns, they're not really making very much money on those when they send you or sell you a new set for $79. Now, when they say each Joy-Con, I'm assuming that's per half. That means if you buy a new one for $79 for both halves, they're actually losing money on that deal. But does it help you feel a little better that they're that much more? There are some conflicting reports. Some are saying they're paying for Joy-Cons for less than that, $50 per Joy-Con at retail. But I think the combo is $79, is it not? Anyway, there's photos as well. They tore this thing apart. And they say that the PlayStation and Xbox... PS4 cost $381 build at the time it was launched. So that's $381 at the time it was new, which was only $18 below its retail price. The Xbox One, on the other hand, cost them $471, and that console was only $347 at launch. So Microsoft took some losses on that. The cost of a DualShock 4 in 2013, again, that's back at launch, was $18. Xbox One controller, only $15. You're paying full $49 for those. Anyway, I always find this kind of stuff interesting. Expensive hardware means sometimes you take a loss. But Nintendo's not exactly taking a loss out of the door, but this is probably the closest they've shaved their margins in a very long time. Wonder if anyone out there listening has had to buy a new Joy-Con or a new Joy-Con set. Mine have held up just fine, so no issues here. Drop me an email, scott@frogpants.com. Let's talk about it. All right, as predicted yesterday, we have Project Scorpio specs, full specs. You guys, I don't want to freak you out or anything, but this device is capable of native 4K 60 frames per second. I say capable because it doesn't necessarily mean every game that comes out for this thing will have native 4K or 60 frames per second. A lot of times to get it out of the hardware that you need to get out of it, you got to sacrifice something. Probably resolution is one of those that'll happen here with some of the newer games that come out for the Xbox Project Scorpio. Anyway, according to a new report from Digital Foundry, the console specs are beyond what we've seen in current console generations. Scorpio is able to run a Forza Motorsport demo at 60 frames per second in native 4K, at least it seems so. The graphical setting on an Xbox One equivalent level. In terms of specs, the console boasts one terabyte hard drive, which is, I guess, nice, although 2 terabytes, more like what I expect these days, as well as 12 gig of GDDR5 memory. That's the same kind of RAM contained, that's a faux pas, in the PlayStation 4. It's important to note, though, that Sony's device only contains 8 gigabyte. Is that the Pro and the 4? I think that might be both of those. Anyway, the 12 gig is split into two portions. 8 gig is accessible developers, 4 gig is reserved for system use. So that's an increase over the Xbox One's 8 gig of overall memory, which was split in the same way, 5 and 3. That's a big deal. GPU is 4.6 times more powerful than the Xbox One's. It's not bad. Described as Digital Foundry as a beast compared with the faster CPU. The result is a more stable and higher frame rate. No screen tearing and so on. Faster load times is how you're going to see benefits there. The game will play 360 games. Well, backwards compatible ones, that is. That was a whole different architecture at the time. And it will, of course, play all new Xbox One games on the Scorpio as well as native games for it. So, you will now be able to, in theory, capture 4K, 60 frame per second HDR gameplay. And this device will let you scrub through that gameplay for your best screenshots, videos, clips, and that sort of thing. Does not contain a Kinect port. So if you want to do that, you got to get a USB adapter to use your Xbox One camera device. No native... Boy, the Kinect, they have just thrown that down the toilet, have they not? Yee. Anyway, if you're worried if you don't have a 4K TV, don't worry. This thing will certainly downscale and be just fine on your 1080p set, which you're totally fine. No price has been confirmed, although many are suggesting $499 at launch. We will know more this fall. It's supposed to come out this holiday. We don't even know if the name will be Scorpio. We don't know any of that right now. But we do know how powerful it is, and it seems to be powerful. So more on that as we know it. Well done, Xbox One. Or, sorry, Microsoft. You're about to scoop Sony, I guess. A game I quite enjoyed in the last generation was State of Decay. It came out on the Xbox first. I believe Live Arcade release is where that showed up, and then it ended up on PC, which is where I played it. And though it was a little janky, it wasn't the most beautiful game you'd ever seen, and kind of had some issues. It's like GTA in a zombie universe, and I thought it was really fun. I enjoyed the heck out of State of Decay. When I heard State of Decay 2 is being worked on, I got super excited. Because in my mind, there were so many areas it could improve upon as compared to the original, and bring some new stuff to the table. So, good news, everyone. Undead Labs has confirmed that State of Decay 2 and its maps in the zombie sequel, or rather its zombie sequel, will have a bunch of maps. Not just one map, like the other one just had a map, right? This will have multiple areas to work around in. 3 to be total at out the gate. Roughly the size of the original on each of those maps. They say they'll be varied. You should see slightly different environments, or expect to see slightly different environments, definitely different landmarks and locations, different layouts lending themselves to different strategies, unique home sites, and even different mission types, according to Undead Labs. Boy, they really tied themselves to the zombie genre from here and forever, haven't they? Just like straight up, like, hey, we're Undead Labs, guess what we make? Games about dead people. They went on to explain that the reasons why State of Decay has 3 maps instead of 1. The idea is the studio wants the player not to experience a sense of deja vu. And this gives Undead the freedom to potentially expand the game even further with more locations in the future. Are you guys excited about this game? I know we're all sick of zombies. I get it. We're all walking dead to death, right? But come on. Get excited about a zombie game. This is one to do it with. State of Decay 1 was awesome. If they don't try to overcomplicate things and keep the simple sort of GTA formula going here, it could be great. I loved it. The cars drove kind of funny. Maybe that'll get fixed. Graphics were janky. Whatever. I have high hopes. Anyway, this game launches this year on Xbox One and PC. No PlayStation release as of yet. but I'll be getting the PlayStation, or rather the PC version for sure. Oh, and I got a new PC today, you guys. I'm hooking it up later. I got one from Doghouse. I'm going to do a full unboxing video and reveal. You guys are going to love what they sent me. Holy crap. I'm so excited. It's got a GTX 1080 in it. Huge upgrade for me, and I'm really excited. Anyway, more on that later. State of Decay 2 coming this year to a console / PC near you. Well, it's time to finish out the day with Call of Duty. Yeah, that's right. The yearly franchise is about to go into new places. There is a Call of Duty mobile game in production by the Candy Crush creator, King, which you may recall was purchased by Activision Blizzard a little more than a year ago. How long's it been? You know, that's a weird acquisition because they bought King and then we didn't see anything. And I was begging for, right out of the gate, a Diablo 3 gem matching game that would sort of, you know, be right in King's wheelhouse with the whole Candy Crush thing and everything. That didn't happen. This is unfortunate. But anyway, they're going to make a Call of Duty game. No, they don't say anything about whether it'll be matching gems, but probably not. The quote is this: "Our challenge as a team is to create a Call of Duty experience on mobile that will strive to transform the best console experience fans know and love while breaking new ground for mobile and redefining the genre." That's some PR right there, isn't it? Zero ideas of what that means, though. They didn't say anything about how it'll look, what it'll play like. There are many job postings for a Stockholm-based studio. Well, that is the King Studio there, including art director. But it does give you an idea of maybe, I don't know, they're trying to do something ambitious with mobile when it comes to Call of Duty. Up till now, that's been a pretty boring space for Call of Duty to expand into. Quote, our approach and ambition is to be fresh, social, and highly accessible. Oh, man. Making me nervous already. While providing a very authentic game experience, the team will prototype extensively, have the freedom to think outside the box, and be encouraged to stretch their expertise in ways to create surprising results. We're a lean pack of developers, they say. Anyway, let's see if they can, you know, come through with a transformative mobile experience for Call of Duty fans. My prediction? Not gonna happen. Not transformative anyway. It might be fun. That's fine. It's fine. They've got other plans, too, to take Call of Duty in new places. They've got a film in the works. It would bring sort of Marvel-style extended film universe for the Call of Duty series. Again, I'd feel like it's a wedging something into a... Wedging a round thing into a square hole, but maybe they can do it. I don't want to say they can't. I've seen weirder things. Not too many weirder, but that's pretty weird. Your feedback is always welcome at scott@frogpants.com. And don't forget, if you don't have it already, the Anchor app can be found on iOS and Android and at anchor.fm. Thank you guys for listening. I'll be back tomorrow.